The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
WAC, baby, with that hill country. WAC, baby, with that hill country.
Gotta do our nails, gotta do our curls, gotta do these things, cause we're girls, girls, girls.
Gotta make a mess, gotta play with toys, gotta do this stuff, cause we're boys, boys, boys.
Right to left, and left to right, to right, let's fight. Right to left, and left to right, to right, let's fight. I hate you,
you hate me,
but you don't see the things I see.
Well, I hate you,
that's fine by me, cause we don't have a country.
Welcome to Without a Country, the podcast turning insane news into sane news since the year 2020. Tonight's stories include Donald Trump concedes, but does he? Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, the fans are going at it. And also the Million MAGA March. My name is Joe DeRosa. Joining me tonight, for the first time ever, a special guest co-host, my friend Dante Nero. What's up, buddy?
What's up? What's going on, Joey? It's good to be here, man. Thanks for having me on, bro.
Yeah, man, it's good to see you. I'm glad you're here. Wish it was under better circumstances. Corinne is out today. She's dealing with some family issues, and we wish her well, and we hope to talk to her and see her again very soon. But Dante stepped in to help me do the show tonight, so I appreciate it, man. I really do.
That's what I do, son. all day, every day.
I'm glad you were able to do this because, first of all, I told you on the phone today when I talked to you, I was like, you're the only person I called and asked to come in to do it. And you're probably the only person, that I think is as appropriate to do the show, as anybody could be. I mean, I feel like the conversations Corinne and I usually have on the show are conversations that you and I are having on the phone a lot of the time. That's, she was making fun of me for how much I reference you on the show. But there's a reason for that. So, you know, I'm glad.
We're pretty close and we kick it all the time, you know, just for general. I think it's nice that we're able to kick it like that on a general basis. So it's kind of, you know, just it's almost like the fans get an opportunity to see what we would be talking about, even if they weren't around, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree, man. I agree. It's you know, sometimes it gets heavy, sometimes it gets heated, but I feel like we always walk away with a little bit of a better understanding of the bigger picture. And that I always feel like that with Corinne too, even in our most heated moments. You know, yeah. when we had a blow up on the show, it led to us the next week having a much better understanding of each other. So I think it's a good thing, man. I don't think enough people do it.
Yeah, I think also it's kind of a situation where we you know, when it comes from a level of love and an attempt to understand where, you know, like we're having a real discussion, you know what I mean? And as opposed to, you know, people have their talking points and they're just trying to prove their talking points. It's like, it's more of a, like, I guess you could say it's a discussion instead of a debate, you know, a debate, somebody's trying to win, and a discussion, somebody's, we're both just trying to have a better understanding. I think that's kind of what we need, you know?
We got a lot of friends that just need to be right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about, stupid.
Dumb Keith. It bugs me to no end. I mean, comedians, but it's funny, man, because that's a trait of, and, you know, we do it too. We all suffer from it. I think it's something that comedians in particular tend to do because you're used to getting up on stage and you have to stand so firmly behind the material you're presenting And yeah. if you're presenting anything ever that's questionable or whatever, you can't, you know, the audience, it's they're the rabid dogs. They can smell the fear, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and they can tell the untruth or the inauthenticity, you know?
Exactly. So you got to really have a big dick, go fuck yourself, I'm right, energy up there, which yeah. bleeds into a lot of our lives off stage and everything. You know, it's hard to step back from it sometimes, but I'm glad that a lot of the time we figure out way, or at least we try to. I mean, you know, some people. Do you get this from just the voices out there on the internet? I'm amazed because I find I have people telling me that I'm a bleeding heart cuck, pussy liberal, equally with people telling me that I'm a fucking asshole, pig, Republican, conservative.
I don't really get that. I don't know if they call me a cuck, but I think they call me a bleeding heart liberal a lot of times. And I think, I mean, when you said bleeding heart cuck, I was like, hey, how's my friends, the Proud Boys? Because I know they use the cuck thing a lot. So that's a telltale sign.
In all fairness, I don't think I've ever been called an actual cuck, but I've been called all the words that mean all the synonyms. You know what I mean?
The other the synergistic words floating around cuck.
Yeah. They usually begin with P or F. But I mean, Dante, for those of you that don't know, I mean, this is what's so interesting about one of the things that's so interesting about Dante to me, and then we'll get into the stories and everything.
Sure.
But Dante, I mean, I'm sure most of the Gas subscribers know this, but this show also goes out to YouTube every Saturday, so a lot of people out there that have seen it there might not be as familiar with your story, but you were initially a founding member, right? I guess you could say, of the Proud Boys, and then a defector from the Proud Boys, and then eventually a denouncer of the Proud Boys. But that's a very interesting journey, especially given the fact that you're a black dude, you know?
Well, I mean, I think when you say founder, it's a weird kind of thing. I don't even know if anybody who's involved in the organization would even talk about, you know, mention that in the first place. What happened was I was actually friends with Gavin, and the Proud Boys was just, honestly, I mean, you know, and I, you know, I always side upon the side of truth, and to be really honest, Proud Boys was a joke. It was just kind of a joke. It was kind of a playful kind of group that kind of manifested itself into what it is now. And I basically, the whole no wanks thing kind of came from me. So they used to call me the Pope of the Proud Boys. I was the spiritual advisor, I guess. And
Break down no wanks real quick, because not everybody knows what that means. What was the no wanks?
So I used to come. I mean, anybody that does internet content, puts internet content out there. I used to go on Gavin's show, and Gavin had been on mine, and you know that's how you build your fan bases, by going on other people's show and talking, and you know, we kind of always siphon our fans off of each other. I went on and I talked to, you know, I do like a relationship podcast. My podcast is Man School 202. And I went on and I just mentioned that I stopped watching porn because of the fact that I found that porn took the wolf out of me. That, you know, for the most part, when you're watching porn, because first and foremost, I mean, you know, intimate sex doesn't happen that way. Nobody has a behind the ball camera, you know, under the glass table squirt camera, nothing like that. And so you had all these young dudes who are masturbating and watching porn and playing video games and not really engaging with the opposite sex in any real way. They had kind of reverted back to just kind of staying in their mom's basement and jerking off, you know. And I said that it started out just saying I personally stopped watching porn because I found that it took away from the wolf that's in me as a man.
You jerk off before you leave the house, and then you go to the bar, and there's a right. cute chick at the bar, and you don't even care if you talk to her or not. You're like, I'll just sit here and drink this beer. Who cares? You know?
Like, and yeah. it's also a situation where you're also in a situation where a lot of times you won't even go out, you know? You jerk off, you're like, right. I'll stay home. What the heck? And if you're already afraid of the rejection that, you know, trying to talk to some girl would bring, a lot of times you don't want to deal, you know, if you have that fear already, you don't want to do that anyway, you know?
So let me ask you a question, and I'm not baiting you or anything, and we're not here to talk about Proud Boys or Gavin or anything like that, because I've known Gavin for years as well. Gavin and I used to do Red Eye all the time together. I haven't talked to him in a long time. But that's not the drive of this. It's not about opinions on any of that. I'm not baiting you. I'm very curious about your take, because we talk a lot on this show about balance, right?
Right, right.
And we talk about trying to find the gray area and civil discussion, even through the most contrary of perspectives. What I thought was interesting, and I just want to get your opinion on it, was I actually looked up Gavin's website recently, because I know he left the Proud Boys too. And also just to put a point on what you said earlier about the word founder is too grand of a word. What you're saying, it was such a casual thing. It wasn't like you started some foundation or some shit like that.
Yeah, we didn't go. Gavin said, I'm going to start a group. But I honestly think it was fun. You know, Gavin is an anarchist. You know, you say red, he says blue. Right. You say yellow, he says green. He kind of likes that stirring the pot thing. And I don't, you know, I really thought he thought it was a joke. It was kind of something fun to do, and then it manifested itself into something totally different.
So what do you think about, so I was on Gavin's site because I just wanted to see what he was up to, and I was just looking at like his content and stuff. And what I thought was really interesting was Cornel West a few times now has gone on to Gavin's network and debated on shows and stuff like that. And I thought that was a very, because I like Cornel West. I think he's a sharp dude. And I thought it was very interesting. I thought it spoke a lot to where we need to go with the discussion, that these two dudes could sit and have a cordial discussion together where they weren't screaming at each other. As much as people on one side or the other would say negative about either one of them, I thought that was very interesting. And I just wanted your take on it really quick before we jump into the stories, because that's kind of what this show is about. Like I said, it's sort of finding this gray area and having a discussion. Like one of my favorite things I ever saw on TV, and I'm not likening either of these people to this, it's right. just an example. One of my favorite things I ever saw on TV was when Russell Brand had his talk show on FX. He had the first, whatever the fuck they're called, the Baptist, that church. First,
the ones that go to hate the gays and all that.
Westboro
Baptist Church.
Westboro, yes. Yeah. So he had those guys on, and obviously he didn't agree with them, but like when the audience started booing them right away, he was like, no, we're here to have a discussion. I just want to talk. Right. And I find that that's a thing that seemingly is evaporating, because people having contrary discussions has suddenly turned into, every time there's ever a contrary discussion, it's considered elevating and promoting the enemy. And it's just that concept has spanned so wide and so far now that I think it's barreled out of control. I saw a thing where the guy from Bar Rescue on his podcast interviewed Trump, and some of my buddies were like, oh, you hate to see this, and it's this, and oh, Jesus Christ, what's he doing? And it's like, guys, he's just interviewing the president on his podcast. He's not sitting there going, vote for this guy. Now, maybe he is, and I didn't see that part of it, but
right.
I don't think you're wrong to sit and discuss something with somebody that you might completely disagree with. And I thought that seeing Cornel West a few times pop up on Gavin's site, and then also seeing that Gavin has a show where he brings in a kind of a significant liberal and a significant conservative and has them talk and tries to, and he kind of sits in the middle.
I don't think he's doing that show anymore, but I was actually slated to go on there for at one time.
Oh, yeah?
I know he had Roger Stone on there too also, right?
He's had a lot of people on. He's had a lot of people
right.
on.
So I was kind of slated to do it, and then something fell off where it just didn't happen.
Okay.
Look, I think the opposing, always having the opposing opinion and having people to talk about these opposing, I always think that's a good, but I think you have to have a discussion, not a debate, you know, as like what right. I said in the first place. I don't know if I would have a discussion with Westboro Baptist Church because you know, and this is their quote, God hates fags. If we're starting at that point, there's really no conversation, you know?
Right, right. Well, that's why I say I'm not using that as a barometer comparing anybody to that. I'm just saying it was very interesting for me to see on a cable, fairly mainstream cable. I mean, FX is, you know, might as well be at this point regular Fox or whatever. It's not that off the beaten path. And then a guy like Russell Brand, who's wildly famous, talking to them. Right. Now, eventually he got his jab, started making fun of him, because it's like you said, when you start from this, you could tell he was starting the conversation from a place of being like,
and they realized there was none.
Yeah, exactly. He was almost starting it like, I don't agree with you at all, but I want to try to understand somehow how you got to this place. And then he was like, you could see the moment where he's like, is hopeless.
Oh, you're just crazy. You're fucking nuts. I mean, how many times have I done that on my podcast where I was interviewing somebody and then, you know, and I'm talking to somebody and I go, oh, you're fucking crazy. Like, why? I didn't even notice. I thought we were like, oh, this motherfucker's out of his mind, you know? So
it's really interesting, man. It's really interesting. Yeah. But we start the show off with a segment called Twitter Talk. And this is a story that I think kind of pertains to what we're talking about. And I didn't brief you on this one, but I think this is really interesting. So Johnny Depp was removed from Fantastic Beasts Part 3, which is the third installment of these Harry Potter prequels that they're making. He came in, I guess, at the end of the first movie, the end of the first movie.
Yeah, he was in it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So he was asked to step down after a long libel suit that he eventually lost with a newspaper out of London, I believe it was, regarding this controversy swirling around him and his ex-wife, Amber Heard. They're having this real nasty divorce. She's saying he abused her. He's saying she abused him physically. They're both saying the other person was the physical abuser. Friends of both have come out vocally and supported both of them. I would say I've heard a little more vocal support on behalf of Johnny Depp, probably because he's more famous, but maybe also because he's right. Maybe she did. I don't know. I wasn't there, but that's the argument, the debate that they're having. So anyway, he was asked to step down. He very gracefully stepped down and was like, I respect their wishes. I mean, I love that he's still got 10 million.
Yeah, that's an easy step down, right? I said 10 million is an easy step down to not do a movie.
It's like, oh, you mean I get the money and I don't have to dress like a wizard? Yeah, all right. I get
you know,
this money.
You know
and I don't
how
have
it
to
is to
like
put these white contacts in my eyes?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, say I hit her. I don't give a shit. You know what? I hit her. I'll take it easy.
you know how thick those cataract contacts are? Trying to put those in there, they kill you.
Yeah. I saw the Making of Thriller. Remember the Making of Thriller when he's putting in cat eyes? And he goes, it feels like Tabasco's in your eyes. Anyway. So that happened. He was graceful. He was cool. Gentlemanly bowed out. Now a petition hit the internet. It got over 1 million signatures. I don't know what it's up to now. That's creating mounting pressure for them to make Amber Heard duck out of Aquaman 2.
Okay.
And here's what it says. Amber Heard has been, this is the blurb, I guess, on the petition. Amber Heard has been exposed as a domestic abuser by Johnny Depp. In his $50 million lawsuit, Johnny Depp describes many incidents of domestic abuse that he suffered at the hands of his then wife, Amber Heard, including one incident where she punched him twice in the face and another where she shattered his finger with a vodka bottle and his finger had to be surgically reattached.
Wow.
He will bear the scar from that for the rest of his life. So I know sometimes on the internet, this stuff is simply trolls against trolls and people looking for spite versus actual justice. However, in this story, I actually think there is a lot of validity to this petition because I think what's fair is fair. And if we're going to say that a guy who is accused but not proven of domestic abuse and very, very thinly accused, if you kind of follow all this and look at the proof and all this stuff, or the lack thereof, I think that's got to be a two-way street,
sure,
you know,
sure.
Especially when he's turning around and saying, I didn't hit her, she hit me.
Yeah.
You know, and look, if he can show this scar on his finger, I don't know if he has or not, but I mean,
if they're saying they reattached his finger, there's got to be evidence that the finger was cut off, you know what I mean?
Right. So, I mean, now she's not stepping down. She's not. In fact, she confirmed publicly, I think via a tweet, and, you know, definitely put a little sass on it, like to kind of be like, fuck you to the haters. I guess it was last week saying, like, I can't wait to do Aquaman 2, despite these rumors. I am still in the movie. I want to thank everybody for their love and support, you know, blah, 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 all that kind of shit. Now, again, I don't know if he did it or she did it or they both did it. But I do think in a situation like this specifically, what's fair is fair. You're going to make him step down in the middle of all this. She's got to step down, too, man. That's not cool.
I agree. I wouldn't not agree with that. It's funny because you and I have had conversations very similar to this for quite some time. And I think what happens moreover than not is because of well, you know, it's funny. I've talked about this. If you talk about men's, you know, domestic abuse shelters, I think there's only one in Canada, and it's got like four beds. So, and I personally know men who have been battered by women, not because they were punks or whatever, it was because they, you know, they wouldn't defend themselves, and it becomes this kind of practice where you start to, you know, when abuse happens and you let it happen, it becomes it becomes habitual. So, but you and I talk about the justice between, you know, what has happened with the whole Me Too movement and so on and so forth. And you're an avid, component about how justice, you know, it has to go both ways. And I agree with it too, but I also agree that I think there's a human element to this because when there's so much abuse in one direction, when the pendulum swings back, it swings back just as far as the abuse was in the first place. And so there comes this kind of thing where there's, you know, that where justice doesn't become equal on both sides. It becomes an exaggeration of the same way that the abuse was an exaggeration or that, you know, the pendulum swings one way and it swings all the way back the other way. And that's just right. Not, I don't agree with it, but I also understand how that works. I also think this is clearly a different situation where there's sort of a,
right.
You know, I think you can find the balance in this based on the evidence. And it is the same. If he's got to step down, she's got to step down, you know?
Right. I think this is a unique case, absolutely. And yeah. and I do understand like what you're saying about not agreeing with it, but understanding that when the fix for the situation comes in, it's going to lean way, way, way harder in favor of the fix, sometimes right. Nonsensically. So I get that too. And I also think that a lot of people glom on when they shouldn't, you know, it's like, look, no. Call me an asshole.
Because it's disingenuous. You know, but, Right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, it's okay. But I mean, it's like people could call me an asshole or not. It's like when Terry Crews is going, I have PTSD because some agent grabbed my fucking undercarriage or whatever the fuck he said at a party. You know, I used to have a joke on stage when this was all happening about the dude who Kevin Spacey grabbed his dick in the bar. And I was like, I wish Kevin Spacey grabbed my dick in a bar. I go, if he did, that'd be my new closer. Like that would, you know what I mean? Greatest story that ever happened to me. I would tell that laughing my ass off. So yeah. It bothered me when dudes were coming out and being like, this is just like, and I was like, come on, man. No, it's not. It's not the same thing at all, especially with a guy like Terry Crews. It's like, come on, dog. You weren't physically afraid. Give me a break with this shit. You might have been scarred by it. You might be embarrassed, but don't say that this is the same fucking thing as some burly asshole. Don't act like this is grabbing him by the pussy. You know what I mean?
Right. I'm afraid to act because of this. It's funny. I don't know if you saw the D.L. Hughley response. Like D.L. Hughley said, look, man, don't you grow all them muscles so that you don't get your balls grabbed, right? and then Terry Crews went at D.O. Hughley and was like, when I see you, I'm gonna smack you in your mouth. And then, you know, Hughley's a comic, so he was like, oh, so you want to smack me in the mouth, but you don't want to smack the dude to grab your junk. you don't got no smoke for him. So it was kind of funny.
Yeah, man. I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying. And at the same time, we both agree that this is a slightly different situation. This is funky to me.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a real weird one. This is a real weird one, you know, but
Joe, just I mean, a little people. Sorry, just got a couple fact check things here. As of 2017, there was 2 men's only domestic violence shelters open in America. And also, Johnny Depp did not step down until he lost that libel lawsuit. So that has been thrown out. So they were able to label him a woman beater. Or a wife beater, and that's why.
Just because he lost the libel suit.
Yeah,
I mean, which is like, I mean, look, I'm no lawyer, obviously, but I would imagine it's not easy to win a libel suit. I imagine that's a very, very hard thing to, you know. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it's but here's the thing. It's fun. I dated a girl very briefly, and I stopped.
That seems
her.
Weird for you, just briefly.
Ah, shit. No, but I
no joke, a long term guy. No.
Yeah, I'm a serial monogamous.
And what I mean stopped... by long term, weekends long for you.
Thanksgiving weekend. No, I stopped seeing her, and this was not at all serious. This was not at all serious. It was not something I was upset about. It was not something that I
you?
Was hurt by
not
when she
serious?
Did it.
This, we're hitting on all the bangers.
No. What she did, I'm about to say. I'm not in any way saying I was scarred by that. That's not what I'm saying. She would punch. You know, if you said something she didn't like, she would go stop, like into your chest. And I was like, I can't date a person that does this because that's not okay. Right. And what the I kept telling her, I go, don't do that. Stop it. And she kept doing it. And I was like, what is a deal breaker for me? Like, I don't know.
Right,
like,
right. What was your response? Did you go like, look, I'm done. Or what? Did you just ghost her?
I didn't break it off. And when I broke it off, I didn't say. Mainly because you like to punch too much, but I definitely said to her a few times when she did it, I was like, you got to stop doing that. Stop that shit. Because basically what it puts you in is this situation where it's like, look, I'm not afraid right now. I don't feel abused by you, but I also cannot react to this in any way. And it's very inappropriate that you're doing this. And I'm certainly not going to be in a relationship with somebody who I've told several times to stop doing this to, and they keep doing it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like something's wrong with you. So fuck it. I'm out.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm getting at is I'm assuming there are dudes out there where it's a couple degrees harder than that. And they for some reason don't have the self-respect to go, Jesus Christ, you know, look, I'm not going to hit a girl, but I'm also not going to date a girl that hits me. This is crazy. Right, right. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And they never get out. And then the next thing you know, she's, you know, she's pulling your hair around the kitchen and whatever else. I don't know.
Next thing you got, you're missing a finger from a vodka bottle. And then you wonder how you got there, you know?
But I mean, it's a look. Let's be honest. It's a hard thing to take seriously.
I once had a thing with Veronica Moseley once. It's a weird thing because Vecchione came and we were trying to figure out how, because he wasn't doing too well on the dating apps, and we were looking over his. I think it was me and Justin Silva, which we were talking about his profile, and he actually had a picture on there with Rachel Feinstein, right? And she said that Veronica said, "Why would you have that picture on there? And women will never date you with that picture on there." And I said the total obvious, the fact that you have you're confident enough to put a picture with you and a woman on your profile actually goes to a principle that I talk about all the time, which is creating a bidding war, that women find men attractive who other women find attractive. And so we were debating back and forth, and she was like, "You don't know. I'm a woman." And I said to her, "I don't ever take dating advice from a woman, because if you want to know how to kill deer, you don't ask the deer, you ask the hunter." Right. And she got mad and told me she was going to punch me in my mouth. And I was like, at what point would it be okay for me to even say that to you? Like, joking or otherwise, I couldn't even repeat that. And I go, don't ever talk to me like that, because I can't talk to you like that. So, you know.
Yeah. It's fuzzy territory, and it gets very convoluted. And also too, like, you know, I mean, let's be honest, none of us take male abuse seriously. I remember when I was in high school, I went to Catholic high school. There are these two nuns.
Didn't we all?
Yeah. There were these two nuns. They were almost like hippie nuns. Like, they didn't wear like the regular nun clothing and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't wear the habit or anything. And they were cool as hell.
Back then,
really
we used
cool.
to call them whores. No.
if I didn't know any better, I would think, like, these old ladies smoke weed. And maybe they did. Yeah. You know, I don't know. Yeah. But they were just cool like that. They had a real hippie-ish vibe. And they had this thing that was called connections. And once a week during lunch period, you'd go to this. They had this room set up off the cafeteria with like throw pillows and shit on the floor, and you just go in and chill out and watch a movie with them.
And do peyote?
It felt like that. No drugs, but it felt like that. But the movie always kind of had like some kind of message, and then they would say, "Let's discuss," you know, that kind of thing. Mm. And one time they showed us this movie. It was like a made for NBC movie about two husbands that were getting beat by their wives. And I mean, it sounded like we were watching Seinfeld, dude. We were falling out. We were laughing our fucking asses off at this thing.
Right.
And to the point where even they were like, "Come on, guys, it's not funny," but you could tell they kind of thought it was funny too.
Right.
You know? But that's my point, is like, you know, and that's something I think that'll probably change as the society and culture evolves and all that stuff. But it's like, we don't, you know, it's like nobody takes it seriously. When a man gets smacked around, which has probably contributed to Johnny Depp having a harder time proving his case than not, you know?
Right, right. And if you even talk about that a lot of times, and you say that to a woman, a lot of times she'll go, "Well, what did he do?" You know, that's a common response.
Right. Well, that's sometimes a common response from men too, where they go,
"Yeah, well, I mean,
what'd she do?"
Yeah. I got stabbed by a girlfriend, and I remember telling somebody, it was like, "Well, what did you do?" I go, "There's nothing I could have ever done that would warrant getting stabbed."
Even as you say that to me, I'm sitting there going, "What'd you do, Dante?" what'd you do?
I'm just too damn sexy.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite Dice jokes ever. I don't think he ever did it like on a special or anything. He goes every time a guy beats up a chick, nobody ever goes, "What the fuck did she do that made him pick her up over his head and throw her down the stairs?" That's my favorite Dana Gould joke of all time. He describes the Black Dahlia murder.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if you know that murder, but it's
no.
It's gruesome, dude. It's gruesome. The girl, the woman was found in the 40s in Hollywood. She was found in a field. I think her arms and legs were cut off, and her face was, they gave her the, whatever that smile is called.
Like the Joker.
Yeah. Before it was the Joker. Anyway, Dana Gould talks about that, and he describes the entire murder, just detail by detail, for like literally 2 minutes, dude. Dead silent in the room. It's so creepy. And then he goes, "And to this day, the police still don't know what that woman said that made her deserve that." He goes, "It must have been a doozy."
All right. "I hate your mama too, you little dick motherfucker." And they're like, "All right, yeah, Black Dahlia."
No, the fucking Richard Pryor joke about being in jail when they start talking shit. So your woman talks shit to you through the glass. She goes, I never did like your mama." He goes, "Please, God, put my fingers ease through this motherfucker." Let's take a second to take a break and talk about our sponsor, Omigo. They're a modern bidet brand, and they're changing your whole bathroom experience. I got one of these. I love this thing, man. Seldom do I say my bathroom experience has been enhanced, but when I say it, I am referring to Omigo stepping into the bathroom with me, the seat, not the company. These bidets are great. Honestly, they attach right to your toilet. It's super easy. You don't need to call a plumber. It's DIY. It takes like 15 minutes. Honestly, guys, it's easy. You can use so much less toilet paper with this, and you just, it's fresh water. You get clean. You feel better. You need to check out Omigo. It's a game changer. So they got a bidet for every toilet, every butt, and every budget. I want you to go to myomigo.com/country, and you're going to get 15% off today. That's myomigo.com/country, and take 15% off today. Get your bidet today. Back to the show. All right, second Twitter talk story. This is a quick one. Nothing too surprising here, but worth talking about. Trump tweeted, he conceded, and then he and then he
said not.
Here's the key points. This story is from CNBC. Tucker Higgins and Spencer Kimball. It says President Donald Trump acknowledged publicly for the first time that President-elect Joe Biden won the election more than 7 days after media outlets, including NBC News, called the race for Biden. The president's comments made in a seemingly offhand post on social media come as his campaign continues to challenge the rest of the election in court and as his administration is holding up the formal transition process. Shortly after writing that Biden had won, though, Trump wrote in another post that he would not concede and claimed that we will win. So par for the course for Trump. Trump has had, I've lost count at this point. I think it's at least 5 tweets at this point that have been flagged on Twitter.
I thought you were talking about lawsuits. Yeah, but go ahead.
Yeah. No, he's got, he's got at least, I think, 5 tweets on Twitter so far. It's probably more than that have been flagged where they're like, "This is factually not true. You know, where they have to put that warning on it or whatever. And I think Corinne and I were talking about this last week on the show. I don't really remember, but it's something that people are talking about. What's crazy is, so now in his resistance to concede. Even Karl Rove and Chris Christie have come out and said, you have no right to do this right now. You have no proof. You need to step down and whatever. And what's happening is exactly what I thought was going to happen, because people were saying, oh, if Trump loses, these people are going to get behind him. And there's, I go, no, they're fucking not. This is like when a celebrity gets Me Too'd. It's over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're done with you. You can't do anything for them anymore. And you're a pariah and you're gone. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what anybody says. You're gone. Right. You're out the door. That's it. And they'll cover your bullshit up for you, i.e. Harvey Weinstein, as long as you have enough power to keep helping people out. So Trump essentially
saying that about Karl Rove or Chris Christie against the Trump, the Trumpeters, or
I'm saying Trump is Harvey Weinstein, okay? Karl Rove and Chris Christie are the industry. And the second Trump was no longer a viable commodity for them or a moneymaker, they said, we've had it with your shit. We're not going to fucking stick up for you anymore. You can't do anything for us anymore. Beat it. And we're going to join in with the pile on, which is what they did. That's exactly what they did. You know, it's like everybody turned a blind eye in Hollywood to Harvey Weinstein until Harvey Weinstein wasn't Harvey Weinstein anymore. And then all of a sudden, the shit hit the fan. Same thing with Cosby. Same, you know, when that's when the shit always hits the fan. So I'm equating Trump to them in the sense that here's a guy that was in a position of power. And as long as he held that position firmly and legally president of the United States, he was somebody that certain people would always just turn a blind eye to, very much so Chris Christie. And then as soon as he became the guy that had no proof for anything, he lost the election. He went from president to pariah overnight, and nobody's supporting him. And yet he's still out there going.
You got to also look at the fact that he I grew up running the streets, and one of the things you had to have some kind of loyalty. You're not a snitch. And you gotta be loyal. Like, even when I remember when what was it, Sutherland went in front of the in front of Congress, and he was like, it was a quid pro quo, and it was this, and then Trump did this, and Trump did that, and he was like, yeah, I stole gum when I was six, and he just snitched on everything. And you know, I'm not pro Trump, so I was happy that he snitched. But my ghetto side in me was like, you snitch ass motherfucker. Like, like I was mad that he snitched on him just because you're not, so I was debating the two. So
that's how I was with who was the lawyer that rolled over on him, on Trump?
Cohen.
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 That's how I was with Cohen. My Italian shit came out. It was like I don't like this snitch fucking guy. He's a punk. Yeah, but then you're like this rat motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like
it's, you it's rat just, bastard. But what's funny too about, but you have to understand, look what Trump did to Jeff Sessions. Like Jeff Sessions was carrying water for Trump when nobody else even thought he had a chance to win. And then he, just because he didn't want to do something, recused himself. So, because he didn't want to get arrested for doing something illegal, Trump campaigned against him. This dude carried water for him for 4 years, even after he went against him. Jeff Sessions still was supporting Trump. So that's a dirtbag motherfucker. That's a dirtbag motherfucker. I don't, it's just like, come on, dog. Jeff Sessions, you can't ride for Jeff Sessions.
Well, it's. You're going to reap what you sow eventually, right? So it's like, you know, he rolled over on so many people. I mean, you know, Trump is, we talked about it on the election broadcast. Trump is Pesci in Casino. You can't trust this dude. He's too wild. You know what I mean? He's Bishop in Juice. You can't trust this dude.
But that was the same thing we were talking when you and I were talking about the Ice Cube thing. You know, everybody was saying, "Oh, you got to have dialogue." You can't have dialogue with somebody who has no credibility. You know, and if you don't have credibility for your and loyalty for your own people, what would make you think that he's going to talk to Ice Cube about helping black people who don't even vote for him? And it's absurd.
I totally understand that argument. I still think there was value in Ice Cube as a person of influence in pop culture and a person of celebrity in pop culture, and a black dude, frankly, reaching that level where he could step into that arena, that controversial of a guy stepping in. But at the same time, that's the problem.
He did it to Trump. Did the same thing to Steve Harvey, though. Like, this is not he's not the first black guy that said, "Let's go and have dialogue. Well, let's have a discussion." At some point in time, without talking specifically about a threat, at some point in time, when somebody's a snake like that, you got to put two beans in his cabbage and call it a day, because there's just no loyalty. Like, it's funny, reference you use, he had the juice. He was Bishop in juice, you know?
Right, right. But then what do you do? Now put yourself in Ice Cube's shoes. What do you do, though, when you go, "Jesus Christ, this guy might win again," and then he's the boss for another 4 years. So I better get in and try to somehow get what I need for my own interests. And because if I don't play ball and I tell him to go fuck himself, then we're definitely out for another 4 years if he wins again. I mean, there is some logic to that in my head. What do you think?
Yeah, I get what you're saying, that you got to be in the game to play the game, but there is no game. You know, when you look let's go even further back. let's go back to when he first came in 2016. You had Newt Gingrich, you had Sarah Palin, you had Chris Christie, you had Rudy Giuliani. All of these motherfuckers was carrying water for him, and where did they didn't get a spot on nothing. You know, so at some point in time, you got to go, what's that old parable, the scorpion and the frog? It's like, dog, you can't, you not that dude. Which is interesting, because the people who follow him are so loyal to him when he's loyal to nobody. And we're literally talking about 4 years of 4 years of him putting people on, fucking them over, and then bad mouthing them after they have no usefulness after. I mean, we're literally talking about everybody, you know, everybody that's calling. We're not talking about one. We're not talking about just Steve Harvey. We're not talking about Rudy Giuliani, Newt Gingrich, Sarah Palin, Chris Christie. The list goes on. Kelly, Bolton, on and on and on. At some point in time, you got to go, there is no negotiating. You know, there's not going to be any fair negotiation, which is really the point. I mean, even if you down with everything else he's down with, you at some point you got to go, this guy has no loyalty to anybody. Just he's a garbage person, you know. He's not even he's not a racist garbage person. He's a garbage person across the board with no loyalty to anything.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the interesting thing about seeing, you know, when it gets down to, I mean, but also I guess you could say the same thing. People, you know, think Karl Rove is the fucking devil. So seeing him criticize Trump in any way was interesting, but at the same time you go, well, of course, because a rat will do anything to survive, isn't that right, Mr. Hill? You know, like so I don't think
had loyalty to the people that he, you know, to his side, you know what I mean?
That's true. Look,
Donald Trump fired Steve Bannon. Like, how do you rectify that?
That was crazy. That was crazy. That was the first thing that happened during his presidency where I was like, what's going on right now, man? That was the first thing when I was like, you know, like up is down, black is white, blah, 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 blah. when he fired Steve Bannon and then Steve Bannon started talking shit about him. And then
he started talking about Trump started talking about Steve Bannon first.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you what else was crazy. I did a Moshe Kasher had a show on Comedy Central called Problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about trying to bring together different sides in debates.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
Different
perspectives. I remember that.
About the internet. That was mainly about the internet, like problematic issues on the internet, whatever. So, but I worked on the pilot with him, and then I worked on the test shows with him. And on one of the test shows we did, we actually had, what's his name come in? Oh, for Christ's sakes. The kid, the kid everybody hates that wears the yarmulke all the time.
Shapiro?
Ben Shapiro came up. Yeah. Ben Shapiro came in for one of the test shows. And it's funny. I kind of got into it a little bit with Ben Shapiro once on Twitter. And I said to Moshe,
really?
I was like, oh, please. He goes, we're going to have Ben Shapiro on. What are your thoughts? And I go, please have him on. I got a few words for him. And Moshe was like, dude, this isn't a forum for you to air your grievances. I was like, all right, fine. But so I kept my mouth shut.
Can we get this show sold?
Yeah. So I kept my dumb mouth shut. But in that, I remember on that panel, it was
curious. Wait, what? Real quick, I don't mean it. What did you get into it with Ben Shapiro about?
I made a remark on Twitter about. I said stop pointing out every time there's a terrorist event. Pointing out the religious aspect that it's Islam, that it's Islam. Every time there's a domestic shooter, you don't point out that it's a white guy. So right. Stop, you know, stop picking and choosing the character traits you're going to point out about a terrorist and just get down to what it is. Evil is fucking evil. Ann Coulter had some shit to say to me, which bothered me because Ann and I were always really cool. But I also kind of got into it. The last time I saw her was on Red Eye on Fox, and we got into it real nasty on the air. And I think she mm-hmm. was kind of giving me a fuck you back.
Yeah,
because her fans, she knew her fans were going to hop on me, and they did. And then Ben Shapiro said some shit to me, and we went back and forth for a minute. But the point is what was interesting about that test show was watching Ben, and he said he was trashing Ben. And Ben was talking about when he worked at Breitbart with Bannon, and he was straight up just like, yo, Steve Bannon is the devil, man.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't really have any nice shit to say about Trump either. So that was the tip of the iceberg when it was like, this is weird, man. Like everybody that's getting clumped into the same team by the opposition, they don't like each other. This so-called team doesn't like each other. And then when Trump got rid of Bannon, that's when I was like, this is odd. And then the culmination of all of it to me was when Putin came out about a month ago and criticized Trump for criticizing Biden's businesses in Russia. I was like, this shit is crazy.
What the fuck is going on? You're like, why is Bart Simpson on South Park?
Yeah. I mean, it just got to a point where it was like, what the fuck is happening right now? You know? So, but this brings us nicely into the first story. And so okay. Dante, you probably know the way we do this. I talked to you a little bit about it, but
we
read the different takes and then we kind of discuss. So I'll read the conservative take first. Dante will have all the liberal takes tonight, as Corinne usually does. But the first story is about how Trump withdrew some of the accusations in his legal case, in the federal lawsuit he's doing about the election being corrupt and stolen or whatever. So, what is this from? This is from, Mike, what story, what papers?
Fox 8. Fox okay, affiliate sorry. Out of, not sure, but yeah, it's a Fox affiliate.
I think
affiliate.
It's out of PA.
Oh, yeah, Wilkes-Barre, PA, yeah.
Okay. Mihalshik wrote this. So and the headline reads, legal expert weighs in on Trump campaign lawsuit. Pennsylvania is ground zero for efforts by the Trump campaign to challenge the 2020 election process. They filed a federal lawsuit seeking to block certification of the vote count in the Commonwealth, alleging widespread voter fraud without evidence. Late Friday afternoon, two attorneys who were handling the Trump lawsuit withdrew from the case, but it's still unclear how the withdrawal of those attorneys will impact the lawsuit. Here's a quote. We can confirm that the firm has filed a motion to withdraw from the Pennsylvania Federal District Court case of Trump for President Inc. versus Bokvar. I don't know how you say that. We've committed to the court. How do you say it?
Bokvar.
Okay. We've committed to the court to fulfill our obligations as required to ensure transition to substitution counsel. And so as not to cause material adverse effect on the client's interest, we will have no further comment. The firm said the hearing on the lawsuit is scheduled for Tuesday in Williamsport. Eyewitness News spoke with the local attorney who has decades of experience in handling cases in federal court about the Trump campaign lawsuit. The lawyer said, when one files some type of legal action, the bottom line is they have to somehow prove that down the road. His name is Joe DeAndrea of Dunmore. The Lackawanna County-based lawyer says an election challenge is like any other lawsuit. Here's another quote. Well, if this lawsuit involves the allegations of Latino fraud, the parties that are alleging it have to show what actually happened. They have to prove mm-hmm. that. They have to show that something is happening. On Friday, Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro weighed in, saying he hasn't seen any evidence of widespread fraud. DeAndrea also said, without supporting your claim with evidence, real evidence, all claims will fail. I'm not taking a side. I'm just telling you what the legal process is. If there is fraud, I don't know if there is. They have to prove it. If they prove it, they might have a sympathetic judge. If they don't, they might have a problem. I'll just say briefly before you go to your story. This is something we're seeing now recurring that relates to what we were just talking about, that even Fox News affiliates and Fox News themselves are criticizing, or not even criticizing, just pointing out, like, look, man,
not true.
It's just not, you just don't have anything to support any of this. You can say it if you want. You can file a lawsuit. It's going to fall flat. There's nothing to run with here at all. So,
well, there's also you have to take into consideration that if they're filing frivolous lawsuits, the lawyers can become liable for filing these frivolous lawsuits. They could lose their licenses and stuff like that too. So now you have a lot of Trump's lawyers that are pulling back. I think it was 11 out of 12 of the court cases were pulled back because there's no evidence. And if they're gonna put this, you know, put these lawsuits out simply because out of the social pressure from you know, the 70 million people that voted for Trump, or people that are saying that it's stolen, they could lose. They could be under some kind of scrutiny and lose their legal law, like get thrown off the bar and stuff. So you got to think mm-hmm. about that too. So it's self preservation, trying to be loyal to somebody who doesn't give a fuck about any decorum or any kind of honesty about this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's sticky too. It's always sticky when lawyers start going, I don't know about this, man.
Yeah, this one. Right, if a lawyer goes, I feel like this is a little bit too far, you know?
Who's your so read us a little bit or all of or whatever you think is worthwhile from your take, and tell us where, you know, the outlet it's from and all that.
Okay, this is from Politico. It's Trump campaign pairs back federal suit over Pennsylvania elections. It's actually what we were talking about. It's by Josh Gerstein. President Donald Trump campaign has dramatically scaled back its federal lawsuit challenging the election results in Pennsylvania, dropping legal claims stemming from observers who assert that they were blocked from viewing vote counting in countries dominated by Democrats. The retrenched version of the suit filed late Sunday morning with the federal court with Williamsport, PA, withdrew the request for relief of poll watching allegations and now focused solely on varying practices by the county officials for handling mail-in ballots that lacked an internal secrecy envelope or otherwise ran afoul the state election rules. Trump campaign argues that the Trump constitutional rights were violated because some counties made efforts to contact voters who botched their mail-in ballots, while other countries made no such outreach. The legal move appears to narrow the number of votes at stake in the federal suit, a few thousand or less officials in one suburban Philadelphia country. What's interesting, they say Montgomery said a court hearing early this month that they believe was about 93 ballots.
Wait, say, I'm sorry. I was too busy saying I'm from Montgomery County. What did it say?
It was reduced to 93 ballots were cured, with President-elect Joe Biden nearly 69,000 votes ahead of Trump in the Keystone State. The number of cured ballots seemed likely to be too small of a matter. However, the revised version of the Trump campaign, a federal court suit, continues to ask for a court order barring Pennsylvania Secretary of State Kathy Bachvar from certifying the statewide election. So it's literally like, first of all, they're saying that even if this is true, that it doesn't rise to the degree that you would need to ride through to overturn the election. But what's happening, and this is something that I was doing my research on my own, and I'm not sure which county it was, but first they were saying the votes were counted after the date that they weren't supposed to be received. And then when that didn't work, they said, well, we didn't have people we didn't have Republicans in there watching the vote count. And then they changed that to, well, we had people in there, but they weren't close enough. And then they were like, well, they just keep moving the goalposts. And it's just, frivolous lawsuits. So,
and look, I'll say this too, because, I'm sure some people listening will think that, I'm just piling on because it's Trump and I hate Trump and this and that and the other thing. Look, I didn't want to hear this bullshit with Trump. I didn't want to hear this bullshit when Trump won and the Democrats were saying it about him. I didn't want to hear this bullshit about when George W. Bush won and the Democrats were saying it about him. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. We covered a great article last week from actual Fox News that talked about all this and just said, it basically said every election ever is corrupt. They are far less corrupt now than they used to be. But they're still going to be a little bit corrupt. But the fact of the matter is that the problem isn't corrupt elections. The problem is that it has now become par for the course for presidents that lose, or the candidates that lose, to have zero decorum and accuse the other person of theft and whatever else. And that to me, I think, is a great point. And I think that is the bigger problem. The problem to me is this election corrupt? Of course there's some dirty shit. There's always dirty shit going on.
Right.
I don't think there's enough dirty shit going on to prove that Trump actually won, not by a landslide, or not by a long shot, rather. There was a story out today that they uncovered 1,000 more votes for Trump in Atlanta that were, lost, in quote. It's like, it's nowhere near enough.
They're not saying that it was 1,000. They're not even saying it's 1,000 votes for Trump. They're saying it's 1,000 lost votes. So we don't even know what percentage of those votes were Biden votes.
Right. Yeah. So I just think this is really interesting right now. And I think it's truly, honestly, man, I think it's very reflective of the culture we live in and the country we live in and the mentality of the public in this country. I think this is holding a mirror, I think this is holding a mirror up to this country and showing a very ugly reflection of a place that has lost dignity, has lost grace, that has become completely self-centered, that has become completely obsessed with dick swinging and winning and ego and all that shit over having any sort of ounce of class or anything like that. I think it's really gross, man. I think it's really gross. And I think
here's the thing. And I've said this, a lot of my melanated friends, I go, whenever I hear that, I always go, you know, we're having a debate about voter suppression, right? And when you think about this over and over again, right, there has always been voter suppression. There's always been crooked elections. But in the sense of when you're talking about after the Emancipation Proclamation and you're talking about when Black people had to vote, you had poll tax, literacy tax. And then when you didn't have that, you had extensive lynchings for people. You had people where they were in certain counties with 160,000 Blacks were voting. And after they started the lynching, it was reduced to about 1,800 people voting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're talking about when women got the vote, right to vote, you have voter suppression and them stopping women to vote. I mean, we're talking about a country where women didn't have the right to own property at one time. So what's interesting is that, you know, we're talking about really the dumbification of America. 98% of Americans are fucking idiots. They don't read. They don't know history. What is going on now has been going on forever. The names are different. The places are different. You're removing mailboxes and there's a mail-in vote. But we're literally talking about where you know, we're talking about 1868, I believe it was, where you're talking about you tell Black people that they can't vote. That they can't read, and then you create a literacy tax that they can't vote. This is so ongoing, and nothing is really special about this, which is because I was so consumed by all of this, you know, emotionally consumed, and I started reading American history, lots of stuff on American history, and even when you talk about there was a period of time in history where working class whites had connected together with Blacks, with descendants of slaves or freed slaves, the freedmen. And there was a move for the aristocracy of this country to split that party up because poor working white class people, poor working black, ex-slaves and Black have the same interests. I just read this book called 400 Years of White Trash. And it talks specifically about the horrendous things that were done to working class whites in this country, in the South, across the board, serfs, indentured servants, which was only a slight bit better than what they, you know, in terms of labor, than how they were treating slaves. And so when we go to the point where we go, oh, this is so uncivil. It's really not. It's uncivil when it comes to white males and the fact that they're being affected by this when underclass and underserved people have been going through this through the history of this country. And so when you go make America great and Black people go win, it's because we have a different story.
Well, I agree with that. I agree with that. And I guess my take is I'm not saying, oh, what a shame how far we've fallen from grace, because I've said from the beginning of the whole make America great thing again, it's never been great. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. But I guess what I'm saying is it's interesting that it's this out in the open now. You know what I mean? That it's this transparent now.
Well, I mean, it was something. I'm sorry, but it was out in the open when if you go something as fundamental as you go, it's illegal for Black people to learn how to read, and then you go, you can't vote unless you read. How more out in the open can it be? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But do I not? I mean, you and I talk about this all the time. Do I not understand that when people do not have that as their truth, as their life experience, you really can't expect people to understand that or even to think that it's happening. Do you know what I mean? Like it's so far-fetched. I mean, when you look at the whole George Floyd thing and you go, wow, you know, so many people and liberals and Republicans and conservatives say this is horrific. But dog, I mean, I'm 54 years old. I remember when they shot Amadou Diallo 41 times because he had a wallet in his hand. This was in the early 90s. So It's almost frustrating when you start to talk about this and you go, and my experience, just my knowledge of this is so far exceeds. And then I'm on Facebook and somebody goes, Trump has done the most for black people. First of all, you don't give a fuck. And I'm not saying you have to give a fuck, but if this is not your experience, you know, I'm working every day to kind of live my life, then I'm not going to I don't really care. Mm-hmm. You know, I get in trouble all the time because I don't give a fuck about the opiate epidemic. And people go, how could you say that? It's because you didn't give a fuck about the crack epidemic. It was black drug, and it was a black crack, and you criminalized that. And now all of a sudden, when there's a bunch of white kids, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That was my favorite thing about watching all the Chappelle backlash with the mm-hmm. stuff he was saying. All the backlash on Chappelle was coming from liberal America, all of it, liberal white America. And I found it so interesting that these were the same people weeks earlier saying we need to listen to black voices in America. We need to shut up and listen. We need to just hear them and whatever, until one of those black voices is saying something that discriminates against you in some way, or you perceive it to be discriminating against you or something you care about in some way. And then all of a sudden it was Dave Chappelle's out of touch and needs to be canceled. You know, that, so that makes me laugh. It makes me laugh with people. You know, people's ethics, for the most part, go as far as their own self-interest. They don't go much further than that, you know?
The nature is just to be selfish. I mean, I get in a lot in trouble a lot of times when I, you know, people talk about W.E. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass was a classist. He believed that rich, educated black people should have more than poor, uneducated black people. W.E. Right. Du Bois was a colorist. He believed that light-skinned blacks should have more than dark-skinned blacks. Booker T. Washington felt like he was like an Uncle Tom because he was like black people shouldn't aspire for as doctors and stuff because it's too hard for white people to accept. Like, these are the heroes that as a black man I'm supposed to, and I get, don't get me wrong, I get the context of the timing of what was going on, but you know what I'm saying? It's just the selfishness of even that. I'm a light-skinned mm-hmm. W.E. Du Bois. I'm a light-skinned dude. So light-skinned dudes are less savage than dark. You know, it's just the selfishness. And this is the great thing about understanding history, because, you know, I mean, it sounds cliche, but it repeats itself over and over and over and over and over again.
Right, right. Well, it's the all the king's men story, you know. Everybody's for the working class until they're not a part of the working class anymore. You know what I mean? Everybody's going to do something for their people until they're part of their people anymore, and then all of a sudden it's the whole game changes and whatever. So it's I mean, it's complicated, man. It's complicated. I want to jump to let's skip the MAGA million MAGA march story. Who gives a shit? It bombed. It bombed, and a bunch of people got arrested. And
it was a MAGA get together.
yeah. I mean, you know, it is what it is. I want to skip to the last story because this deals with race.
I want to say something about that, though. You know, it's like when people were talking about how, you know, oh, there's going to be violence and they're going to be violence in the street. And look, dude, you know, Joe, you know me years. I've always been a street dude. And, you know, I grew up running the streets and I grew up in a house and both parents and stuff. But, I always found myself accidentally in the streets. And I'm going to say something that's going to sound simple, but it's really nobody wants that smoke. Given an opportunity, everybody wants to go to heaven. Nobody wants to die first. And so, you know, and that's liberals, that's liberals, that's conservatives. It's if when you got to give up what the fuck you got to give up to get what you want, you watch how quickly people seep back into the background because you ain't really down. You're not about, we're talking, righteousness is such a scarcity in this country. It's just truthfulness and credibility across the board, but it always has been.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny, man. It's funny when you look to, when you want to talk about bringing, being forced to prove your credibility before you're allowed to be a part of the cause, right?
Yeah.
I mean, probably the best examples you could look at are gang culture and organized crime, because they're like,
they're about that smoke.
In some cases, literally beat the shit out of you to see that you really want this. You can't just go join the mafia. Go join the Blood for Crips. You got to earn it. Literally bleed for it.
Dude, I pledged, you know, I'm a frat boy. I'm a Q dog. And, you know, I pledged for 13 weeks to be in my fraternity. Got the shit beat out of me for 13 weeks. You know, so right. you couldn't just march in. And nobody wants to make a sacrifice.
Right. Another quick break to talk about another lovely sponsor, Cushy Dreams. Cushy Dreams, serving you up that high-quality CBD bud. I love this stuff. I've told you before, I'll tell you again. I don't like that weed anymore. I can't take it. It freaks me out. I get paranoid. I get all in my head. I'm sinking into the couch. I feel like everybody hates me suddenly. But I like smoking. So what do? When you love weed and you can't smoke that weed anymore? Or maybe you love weed and you don't want as big of a buzz or as big of a high. I'll tell you what you do. You turn to CBD. And that's what's so great about this stuff. It's giving you calming effects that are more immediate with smoking the CBD instead of popping a pill or something like that. And it's got you smoking less weed. Smoke the Cushy Dreams instead. They got the dream flavor at night to go to sleep. They got the hustle flavor in the morning to get you going. They got the relaxing flavor to get you to calm down. Grown in the U.S., 100% hand-trimmed, never machine-done. Cushy Dreams takes an artisan approach. Every run is a small batch. Independent lab testing, compliance, and purity. Each batch is slow-cured to preserve flavor and cannabinoids. Cushy Dreams Cannabis comes in both cans and pre-rolls. In case you're too lazy to do it yourself, they can do it for you. And if you're a pothead, when you open up one of those cans, you're going to instantly realize this is high quality bud. Not saying you can't smoke it if you love pot. It's just sometimes this comes in more handy. Cushy Dreams ships legally to all 50 states and is CBD cannabis that isn't going to get you high. Again, I love it for that reason. So go to cushydreams.com and use the promo code country for 20% off. That's KUSHYDREAMS.com and use the promo code country to get 20% off. Back to the show. We got to move to this last story because we don't have a lot of time left. But this deals with this is definitely linked to racial relations. And you know what? I'll just read the one take because this is one of those stories. We don't need to read both. These are not very slanted takes. Both of these stories kind of just state the facts and then we can discuss. But Cracker Barrel got in trouble because they had to publicly apologize because they had a decoration at their Connecticut restaurant that resembled a noose. The restaurant, this comes from Fox News, Michael Bartiromo, I guess how you say it. Anyway, the restaurant chain later clarified that the noose, so they had this thing hanging, it looked like a noose. They clarified that the noose was just the wrapped cord that was attached to one of the decor items, but said it was still completely unacceptable. Employees failed to notice the resemblance before it was put on display. Photos of the offending decoration, which was first noticed by a customer over the weekend, were later shared to Twitter by user Alfonso Robinson, accompanied by a caption reading, "Someone at Cracker Barrel in East Windsor needs to explain why there are nooses on the ceiling," and then he had pictures. By that evening, Cracker Barrel responded, claiming the noose-like decoration was actually an original wrapped cord belonging to an antique soldering iron. The restaurant added that the item had since been removed. Cracker Barrel said, "We're sorry this happened. The antique electric soldering iron has an original wrapped cord that should have been that should not have been displayed. We have removed the item from our East Windsor store. Many thanks to the guests who notified us of this so we could correct our error." At one point, the manager said, "You don't notice things like that. sorry, you might notice things that I don't, which I really appreciate, because as a white man, he might not have viewed certain things the same way that a black person would. And to that end, some users on Twitter have called for Cracker Barrel to review all decorations at all locations or announce a timeline for such a review. Okay, so that's the basic ins and outs. That's all we really need to know. So my thought, I'm cross about this. This is a tough thing because this gets into that dicey territory. You had mentioned earlier, people don't read history, people don't know history. And I think that we have a problem in this country of erasing problematic history and pretending it never happened instead of recognizing it and trying to learn from it. I think it's a really, really bad habit that we have in this country. I think it's happening now a lot now in entertainment with, you know, these PSAs that they're putting in, disclaimers in front of old movies, explaining to people how to interpret the racist characters in one way, how to recognize that the non-racist characters are the good guys. I think this is I think that approach to history is very dangerous. That said, I don't think you should have something resembling a noose hanging from your ceiling, especially a Cracker Barrel, which is so affiliated with the South. That said, it is important that we go, all right, that's not a noose, that's this, that's that, but maybe you just don't have that antique in your store. You know what I mean? Like, so I get removing it. I understand why the visual of it is alarming to people. I understand that it is something to be very much misinterpreted, and for all the right reasons, because of the way it looked. And it did look like a fucking noose. I mean, you know what I mean? Right. And I do think it's a little crazy that the Cracker Barrel people didn't realize that until it was pointed out to them. But when it starts to get into all decorations at all Cracker Barrels need to be reviewed, and where do we draw the line with this? Where do we say, you know, at some point we can't turn over every stone? At some point we have to just say, it's not what it looks like. This is just something else. And we're all going to interpret things in a certain way. And we can't cross every single T and dot every single I underneath that heading, you know?
Here's an interesting thing. I'm so proud of you. And I also want to call you a cuck. because here's the interesting thing about this. I don't know. I'd be interested to, and maybe we'll talk about this after, what you think my take on this is. But here's an interesting thing. First of all, something you said about his misinterpreting history and blah, blah, blah. But first of all, nobody's teaching the history. Where cancel culture is taking history and trying to strip away the negative history and stuff. But really, I don't even think it's that. They're not even teaching history, period. First of all, you understand the historical reference to this, do you know that lynching, which I understand the lynching was used to suppress the black vote, it was a symbol of making black people, putting black people in their place. But what we also, historically, lynching was a way in which white men were killed as well. You hung people. I mean, if you look at old Westerns, how did people die? You hang them high, right? Yeah. I mean, hung outlaws. So it's a part of the culture of this country, lynching in general. Now, when we're talking about, say, for instance, the Bubba Wallace thing, where there was a lynching and a guy with the first black NASCAR driver and blah, blah, different situation, but it's a real situational it's a situational thing, because when you first look at it, this is not something that's pointed at black people specifically. There's white people, there's black people, and both people were lynched. I think, and in this situation, I don't see why you just can't, yo, we fucked up, let's take it down. You know, it's absurd the kind of contortion that's going on about something that is clearly a mistake. I mean, this right. is not, I mean, well, did they have an all black section and they hung this only in the all black? I mean, it well, just, it's this. Just
I
not.
Would, I would say this. I would say this. I hear you. I hear you. And that's exactly the place I always come from with something like this. And I, the positive side to the story to me was that once they said, sorry about that, we fucked up. Everybody seemed to back off and go, all right, it was just a mistake or whatever. However, where I thought it started to kind of cross a line was when people said, we need all decorations at all Cracker Barrels reviewed and give us a that's the part where I was like, come on, guys. Like this, it was a fuck up, man. Like, you know, and look, I don't know that Cracker Barrel. I've never been. I've been in two Cracker Barrels.
I don't even think it was a fuck up. It was kind of more just an oversight. Do you know?
An oversight. But I mean, Jesus Christ. I can't imagine that no black people have ever been inside that Cracker Barrel ever. You know what I mean? I can't imagine that this was spotted by the first black person ever inside a crack. So that's not to say, so leave it up, but it is to say, but a lot of people have come through and not been offended or realized that it wasn't what it appeared.
A lot of white people have come through and not been offended because, and there's a lot of white people in this country, plenty of white, I mean, that was the way that we executed people in this country. If you understand any history, you understand that. I mean, we can also understand, both of those things could be true. It's also a symbol of suppression and control that black people look at very seriously, but there has to be a context in that. And there is no context. I mean, this is the absurdness of this. And then what does this do in the grand scheme of, I mean, look, if we're talking about Confederate flags, you know my take on this, but to the same token, I mean, come on, this is so arbitrary and the context of it. And maybe somebody did go, Let's tie this up like a noose and hang it up. Maybe a racist did that, but there's no proof of that, and so we have to. Right. I think we just need to side upon the reasonable aspect of it.
This is funny because we kind of have switched sides of the table on this one because
yeah.
I could say to you right now that this is one of those incidents where, as you said earlier, justice is messy and the pendulum swings the other way, and it swings really hard the other way. So this could be clumped in with one of those things. And this is why I always say, like, I, you know, when you say that to me, I always say, I get it, but it's dangerous for reasons X, Y, and Z. And those reasons always are that when we start to shine a spotlight on things that aren't important and aren't as, you know, are much more able to be dismissed than the real incidents, then the real incidents start to get overlooked. And unfortunately, that's what happens with every movement, whether it's for gender or race or politics or the poor or whatever it is. Everything starts to get clumped in because it makes a good news story. And then all of a sudden, the real problem doesn't get addressed anymore. You know what I mean? Like, look, we've been talking for 3 years about the pariahs in the entertainment business that have done this, that, and the other thing to women. What we should have been talking about was instead of being hopeful that we could take every single man down that fucked up and equate him to a rapist, right? What we should have been talking about is how do we fix this problem of dudes taking their dicks out? Because this is a problem. Dudes are whipping their dicks out. And if we keep saying that every time a guy said something inappropriate in an interview or pinched a girl's ass, and look, that shit's inappropriate. I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not even saying it's not assault in some cases. But when you start saying all of that is the same thing, which is what people were saying, I don't care if
you
just
see the thing that happened with Matt Damon, where Matt Damon said, let's be honest, there's a difference between somebody saying something inappropriate and saying, you know, you should smile more, and somebody who's actually punched a girl in the face and raped her. And then they jumped and piled on him like he said something that wasn't, you know.
And then you don't have the conversation that needs to be had, which is, you know what I mean? Like, to me, this story, look, I think it's a valid, I think it's something that deserved to be brought to the attention of Cracker Barrel. I think it deserved to be discussed. I even think it deserved to be taken down because, all right, shit, man. You know, I mean, look, if I have a mask that's painted pitch black with red lips and white around the eyes hanging on my wall, and then you see it and you go, what the fuck, Joe? And I go, no, you're misinterpreting it. That's actually a prayer mask from, it's like, dude, just take it down, please. You know what I'm saying? It's argument when they go, you know, the swastika isn't actually anti-Semitic, which is why I celebrate it. It's actually a symbol. It's like, just take the fucking thing down, please. You know what I mean? So I feel that way about this. Just take it down. Fine. But when it becomes a national news story, now it's pulling focus from what the real issue is. How do we stop these brutality incidents with cops happening? How do we stop true discrimination from happening? Like 20 years ago or 15 years ago when the black people got turned away at the Denny's or whatever happened there. You know what I'm saying? Like that stuff just starts to get lost in the shuffle when it's happening, because all of a sudden now every single little thing is blown up into a national news story, which is why I always blame the media more than I blame anybody else, because they have a lot more control over the public discourse than they let on that they do. You know, let's never forget.
It's profit. It's also profit, though. Profit. I mean, they're making money off this. It's the same thing like when you talk about the idiot that had, I think, what did he have, the AIDS cure, and then he wanted to charge $5,000 a shot or something. I mean, we're talking about a lack of civility. When you're having this conversation, when somebody's being inauthentic about the conversation, I think all you have, if you use the Socratic method and you ask questions, it all falls apart very quickly. Do you know what I mean? When you look at this particular thing, when you ask, this is a thing, it's not, you know, I mean, there's things that would make you go, yeah, this was purposeful. This doesn't have the smell of that. But I will say also, like, I want to, you know, that I have this theory about culture, is that, and you and I talk about this all the time, that the only thing that changes people's behavior is the change in culture. And the analogy, if I got time to do this, I'll do this real quick. The analogy is this. You lived in LA. In LA, if you jaywalk, right, you will get a ticket for jaywalking, correct?
Yeah, yeah. But so, yeah, so, you basically, so, you take it more seriously.
But because there is, you jaywalk and there's a, you get a ticket, right? There becomes a culture of not jaywalking. So even when there's no cop around and you're not getting a ticket, the community, when you jaywalk in LA, people look at you like you're out of your fucking mind. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
So there's this kind of societal and social pressure to not jaywalk. If you get a ticket in New York jaywalking, you cuss the cop out that gave you the ticket for jaywalking. Like, what the fuck? It's New York City, right? There's no consequence for that, right? You have to have a consequence first that starts to change the culture. And once the culture is changed, right, then the behavior changes. So even when you and I talked about this all the time, and maybe this is not because I know the Matt Lauer thing, but let's say a guy's got a button to lock women in so he can pull his dick out in his office, right? Because guys who haven't gotten burnt, who maybe, you know, the punishment didn't meet the crime or something, because the pendulum swung too far off to one side or the other, nobody is making the call to the locksmith to put the button to lock women in my office so I can grab their pussy. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Because we find where the middle is when people are afraid of the consequences, and then we kind of find the balance of that. But you don't find the balance until somebody gets punched in the fucking mouth, and then you can have the discussion afterwards. You can't really have discussion, because if there's no consequence, everybody's go fuck off.
The antique, and I would say in this story, the antique soldering iron is the button, is the Matt Lauer button, where you can't. You can't have a Cracker Barrel. You can't be at a Cracker Barrel. You go, no, my button's not for whipping my dick out. I just want to be able to lock my door without getting up. They're like, we don't care why you want it. You can't have the button.
Right. That's taking the mask. Just take the swastika down. I know it's a Dinko warrior. Yeah. They use it. It's for all knowing.
We got to wrap up, man. What do you want to plug? Thank you for being here with me, man. This was really great. I love really
you to death,
bro.
You know that. This was good. Yeah, I enjoyed
Corinne,
this.
We love you. You,
check out my relationship, sex and relationship podcast, Man School 202. I'm on Laugh Button, and anywhere you can find podcasts, you can check my YouTube channel and my Patreon. Everything's Man School 202, and I do relationship counseling through DanteNero.com, which is my website. Right, Joe? I got the best advice when it comes down to that. That good, right?
Yeah. Yes. What do I got to plug? Okay, Joey Rose's Sandwich Shop, now open. The pop-up stand the pop-up shop at the Stand Comedy Club and Restaurant in New York City in Union Square on 16th Street. We're open Wednesday to Friday, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. Come on by. 8 sandwiches, $8 a piece. Everybody's been coming through. I want to thank everybody for the support. Fans are coming through. My friends are coming through. Comedians, Dante, you, bunch of people.
I love the beefy.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the support, guys. Please keep coming through. We'll be there again this week. I also want to plug my other podcast. Let me just plug my special, You Let Me Down, is available for free now to watch on the Comedy Central YouTube channel. If you want to check that out, go check it out. Thank you to everybody that's watched so far. And we'll see you in hell, my other podcast with Patrick Walsh and myself, doing our thing, reviewing movies, Patreon only for new episodes, patreon.com/WSYIH. Wait, I said we, WSYIH. Yeah, podcast on patreon.com, and then back catalog available wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to everybody for subscribing to Without a Country. Thank you for everybody for reviewing. Keep doing it. Keep it up. Pre-orders available now for merch. Go get that shit. What's the podcast merch site, Mike?
Podcastmerch.com.
Podcastmerch.com. And we also, I'm supposed to plug this, we got a sale going on starting November 23rd, ending November 30th. Order between those dates for two key reasons. You're going to get guaranteed Christmas shipping and Black Friday / Cyber Monday sale. 10% off site-wide, 15% off anything over $100, any order over $100. We got hats and tees out there. Check it out. Joe DeRosa Comedy on Gmail and Twitter. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, everybody. Take care.
Gotta do our nails, gotta do our curls, gotta do these things, cause we're girls.
Gotta make a mess, gotta play with toys, gotta do the stuff, cause we're boys.
Right to left, and left you right. Let's fight. Right to left and left to right. To right. Let's fight. I hate you.
You hate me.
But you don't see the things I see.
Well, I hate you.
That's fine by me. Cause we don't have a country.